Tonight being our church anniversary and therefore already having some extra bits coming up in the service is an occasion for a shorter sermon, and after last week's extra long one, that's probably welcome news to you all. A church anniversary is a good time to reflect on our identity as a community of followers of Jesus, and our Bible readings tonight raise some important questions about Christian identity. And I want us to briefly reflect on those and see what they might be telling us about our identity here. Our reading from Paul's letter to the Galatians had a lot to do with identity. The apostle was locked in a dispute with some hardline Christians who were questioning the Christian identity of the churches that Paul had planted outside the Jewish territories. And these people were arguing that Christian identity was fundamentally Jewish, and that therefore being a follower of Jesus required compliance with the whole of the Jewish law, including the key Jewish identity markers, circumcision, Sabbath keeping, and kosher foods, which Paul was not requiring of his non-Jewish congregations. Now, in the first century, that debate was the big hot potato. It was probably even bigger than our generation's debates over the acceptance of homosexuals and same-sex marriage in churches. But hardly anyone in the church is still arguing about whether we need to comply with the Jewish identity marker laws. For most, that debate was done and dusted in the first century. However, these kind of debates are not usually really just about the specifics, but about some other needs that underlie them. And so they have a way of keeping on coming back in new guises. You see, the real issue is a fundamental issue of identity. Who are we? And how do we identify who is us and who is not us? The periodic eruption of debate in this country over the things that can be defined as un-Australian is a classic example of this same phenomenon. Who is us and who is them? And religions are almost universally vulnerable to becoming fixated on defining and nailing down the necessary beliefs and behaviours that act as the boundary markers that clearly show who is us and who is outside of us. Now, you can see how this focus on boundary markers and identity is playing itself out in our gospel reading. Jesus is attending a dinner party in the home of a member of the devoutly religious Pharisee party. Now, the Pharisees were a lay religious movement with a strong emphasis on personal purity and holiness. And their understanding of holiness had a lot to do with keeping themselves well and truly separate from those who fell short of their standards of purity and holiness. So you can imagine the horror of Simon the Pharisee when a notorious local prostitute walks in on his dinner party in his house, weeping, and starts giving one of the guests a foot massage. Now, you can see the emphasis on holiness as keeping separate, because Simon doesn't just judge the woman for this behaviour, he also judges Jesus. If this man was really a prophet, he would know who and what kind of woman this is who is touching him, that she's a sinner, and he wouldn't let her anywhere near him. Keep separate. Now, while the debate about whether Christians need to be Jewish may be long over, what's going on in this story is just as prevalent today as it was then. It is still very common for Christians to define and protect their identity by shunning those whose beliefs, behaviours, and lifestyle we regard as un-Christian. So whether it's Muslims or Hindus or atheists or gamblers or marijuana users or homosexuals or sex workers or asylum seekers or fundamentalists or liberals or whatever, it's extremely common for Christians to have categories of people for who they think that they should avoid having anything to do with, lest they somehow become less Christian themselves by their exposure to these others. And yet I would defy you to find even a single example of Jesus treating anyone as an untouchable. Certainly in this particular story, not only does Jesus accept the tearful foot massage, seemingly without embarrassment, but he declares her to be one who has been forgiven, and then he holds her up as a shining example of gracious hospitality from whom oh-so-religious Simon would do well to learn a few things. So if we can't find examples of Jesus trying to keep himself pure by keeping certain people at arm's length, then how can we possibly imagine that such holy separatism would be part of our identity as his followers? Surely our identity must be found in following his example and treating other people the way that he treated them. It seems to me that we tend to fall into these holes whenever we begin to define our own behaviour in terms of what we are to avoid. Because it's only a short step from putting a whole list of thou shalt nots on ourselves to drawing back in horror and outrage at those who both shall and do. I'm realising this even with the kind of thou shalt nots that I totally agree with. They may still be an unhelpful way and an un-Jesus-like way of thinking about things. At home group this past week, we were doing a study on the New Testament teachings on non-violence, and I realised that one of the reasons that some Christians can still argue in support of Christian involvement in war is that Jesus doesn't actually make much in the way of thou shalt not use violence type statements. And so for those who read the Bible in a way that seeks to identify all the thou shalt nots so that they can be in perfect compliance, fighting in a war doesn't seem to be ruled out. But if instead of asking, what does Jesus say we must not do to our enemies, you're to ask, what does Jesus say we should do to our enemies, you get a very different answer. What would Jesus say if we were to say to him, well, in all your teaching you never said thou shalt not go to war, so it must be okay for us to fight if our enemies attack our country, right? I think Jesus would probably look a little perplexed and reply, so what part of love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you and pray for those who abuse you, didn't you understand? Do you see what I'm saying? There's a big difference between defining yourself as anti-violence and defining yourself as committed to loving both neighbour and enemy, no matter how they treat you. And Jesus' way of defining himself seems clear. We don't see him going to the cross with gritted teeth saying, I must not resort to violence, I must not resort to violence. Instead, we see him going to the cross saying, Father, forgive these people whom I love, for they don't know what they're doing. Whether you take to Jesus' feet with massage oil or with hammer and nails, he loves you just the same and reaches out to you with gracious welcome and hospitality and forgiveness and healing. What on earth makes us think he'd respond any differently if you were gay or Hindu or even a soldier? So as we seek to define ourselves as a community of people who are following Jesus in this place as we enter our 160th year, let's seek to follow his example and define ourselves by how widely and buoyantly we can love rather than how narrowly we can behave, by how graciously we can forgive and accept rather than how scrupulously we can judge and control, by how recklessly hospitable we can be rather than how carefully we choose our company, by how gratefully and generously we can celebrate and receive the gifts and growth of others rather than how defensive we can be of our own. In short, let us be defined not by what or who we avoid, but by what we do, following Jesus and thus being known for loving friend, neighbour and enemy alike, warmly, extravagantly, tangibly and resiliently throughout our 160th year and forever into the ages of ages. Amen.